Romans 17.
So where we kind of stopped last week was he had slaughtered the people with the jawbone of the donkey, and then he went and hid in the cleft of the rock, and he, you know, bemoans kind of almost, you know, as many people do in the Bible, oh, you know, I've done this great thing, and now I'm thirsty, I'm going to die from thirst if you don't, you know, do something. And it's kind of interesting that God actually gave. He opened up a cleft in the rock, and water came out, and he was refreshed. And, you know, the name of the place is was called Spring of the Calling. So here's this guy that really, again, we saw people in the other chapters that truly took their vows, you know, deadly serious, possibly. And here's a guy that kind of just lives on the fringes of, you know, physically he lives on the fringes of Israeli territory, and spiritually he lives on the fringe of everything he does. He does by sight, as we're going to see, and I mean, it's the more we get to the end. I was telling Scott, this, I guess I never really, you know, you've read over the story of Samson, and I never really tried to pick it apart. And he is the most enigmatic character. I don't understand. The more I learn about this, the less I seem to understand. I've really been praying about, why this, Lord? Why? I don't, and I haven't gotten, so maybe today somebody here will be able to give us some enlightenment on, you know, where this is going.
Explain pastor's kid.
Well, I guess I could always take that as, you know, the enemy is always looking to destroy a pastor, so.
And the same with Samson. The enemy was always looking.
Yeah, but he always gave in.
Well, but they knew his
weakness. Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so that's kind of where we ended. And it's kind of, I work in a world where we work out of things called tech pubs, which are technical publications. And if anybody's been in the military, I don't know. The way the pubs are set up is you get, there's a list of books, and usually they run from -10 to -, you know, or in our case, it's 110. So there's a -10, a -20, a -30, a -. And each book, the first book gives you the overview. This system has the capability to do this, 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 this. The -20 will say, here's how we do this, 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 and this. Then it'll say, -30 says, well, when you're doing this, this, it, so each following volume gets more and more into the detail of that. So I think it's kind of interesting that here it just says, so you would think this is almost the end. And he says, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So you're like, okay, on to the next thing. But now we kind of go back and delve a little deeper into, because personally, I haven't delved into it because I was going to save it for the end. Everybody knows Hebrews chapter 11 is the hall of faith, right? Is that what we consider? Samson's in there. I haven't seen one thing. I was laughing with Scott this morning, said I would see him in the hall of shame, not the hall of fame. So, but the Lord sees something in here that we're going to stumble across that puts him in the hall of faith, and it's tough for me to understand, trust me. So that's kind of where we'll start, and we'll start out right at the beginning of a...
Oh, it's 16. I wonder how that... That's what I've been reading on.
Good, since you don't know anything.
Obviously, you said you've been reading
it. Read it. Good point. You're probably better off. So, verse 1. Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. So, this is the first time I kind of went back and read. Each time it looked like he was going to create or commit this moral sin, God God seemed to have spared him in some way, like when he was going to marry the Philistine woman. You know, they had this big dust up, and he went and killed 30 people, and he gave his prospective bride to his best man. So it seemed like all throughout the Bible, God had kind of protected him. And if you'll remember crossing the desert, that was Balaam's trap. When Israelites were going, and Balak kept trying to pay him to curse the Israelites, a blessing would come out. So he couldn't get the money, and he was very upset. So finally he came up with the one way. He was like, God's never not going to bless these people unless you get them to stumble into sexual immorality. So I just noted that here. I feel like that is the point that Samson's finally reached in his life. It was like this one wall he hadn't breached. And maybe, and that might not be true. You don't see every moment of his life throughout the whole book. But here it's obvious that he's committed, you know, sexual immorality and with a porn.
One got saved.
Huh?
One got saved.
So the Gazites, and I guess it's kind of interesting that we're talking about the Gaza Strip, which is still in the news, you know, 3,000 years later. And the Gazites were told, Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait till the light of the morning, then we will kill him. But Samson lay till midnight, and at midnight he arose and took the doors of the gates of the city and the two posts, and pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. Couple things. It's kind of interesting. There's an argument about how far he went. There's one hill that's like 35 miles away that they're like, you know, did he care, put this on his shoulders and carry 35 miles? There's another hill, a hill that's only a couple miles away. So there's like an argument. I don't know what that does for. I just thought I would throw it out there. But really what this does, it makes the city indefensible. So now there's a breach in the wall. So, again, I would think this is part of God's plan to just show them that anytime I want to, you know, I can have at you. But again, you know, Samson's doing wrong. You don't understand. I wouldn't. But obviously, the Spirit came on him and gave him enough strength to rip up. You never get the... I know there's a movie out there I remember seeing as a kid, Samson and Delilah. But I don't know how you would cast Samson. Would you cast him as this, like, Lou Ferrigno type figure, you know, that turns into the Hulk and kind of does these great things? Or is he just kind of this normal-looking guy? Because everybody doesn't seem to have a problem trying to fight with him that just never turns out well for them. So I don't know how. I don't know what his physical appearance would be, and we're never told. So, you know, obviously, so here this miracle's pulled off. These guys are actually hiding by the gate, which I find is even more interesting. And he rips the gate off, and the post and stuff, and walks away with it, and they don't notice. You know, so you got to think that's crazy. You know, again, would have to be a miracle. And then it says, so here we go. This is the beginning of the spiral even further down. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. It's interesting. Sorek means empty or fruitless tree. And Delilah means seductive. So I was thinking back, I don't know if anybody else has. So I'm thinking about, okay, the original sin was God said, you can eat anything you want, don't eat this one fruit of this one tree. And we couldn't do that. And now we got to the point, mankind's even sinning with a seductress, which is what Delilah means, and a fruitless tree. So it's not even going to bear, there's nothing good can come from this. It's basically what the name even, and you kind of wonder, you know, if places were called this back in Bible times, how wouldn't you know, man, I don't want to get a woman from, you know, Surek because it's a fruitless endeavor. But nobody seems to, so that's kind of interesting. So the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, seduce him and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him, to humble him, and we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So this could be the kings. There could be five, as many as ten. There's a couple little arguments about that. So she could get anywhere from 5,500 pieces of silver to thousands. So obviously, Samson has become a great thorn in their side that they're willing to shell out this kind of money to have him, to get him under control. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that one could subdue you. And Samson said to her, if they bind me with seven fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her seven fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber, and she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire, so the secret of his strength was not known. A couple of interesting things here. It's odd that she calls them the Philistines are upon you, because you always get the feeling like she's a Philistine, but that might not be the case. And the other thing is, you know, why, as a guy, I would be like, why are you so interested in this about me? Like, that to me, a normal person, I can't imagine dating in the world now, but that would be like something that would set off alarm bells in my head, being like, why are you worried about where I got my strength from or where I, none of your business, basically. But he seems to think it's a great big game. And again, so, and it doesn't tell you how he deals with the Philistines. It doesn't say he killed them, they ran away, you'll see this happen continuously, and it never really gives you the outcome. So I don't know if, like, the Lord's, like, letting him play this game, and there's this attrition of Philistines getting killed every time they play this game, or if they just run away, or... I don't know. That's beyond me. So this ain't working. So, then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be found. Again, you know, for anybody else, I would think that would set off alarm bells in my head. Or has he just reached the level of just cockiness that...
maybe he's just dumb.
Well, that's, he could be as dumb as a brick.
But he's doing it again. Yeah. The same thing with the other one. She begged him to tell him the answer.
Yeah,
the real.
Yeah, it just seems to...
he's doing the whole same thing. He seems like he likes to play games.
Yep.
That ultimately caused him a lot of pain and suffering.
Well, he does riddles.
Right, so it just seems like a real immature person, kind of. You never get the feeling that he's spiritually mature or even humanly mature.
Well, how old was he at this time? Do you even know?
Nah, they never really give you. I mean, I'm assuming he was obviously old enough to get married because his parents are running around with a goat.
And 13.
Yeah, so, like I said, how do you cast him in a movie? Nothing really gives you. And you have to make the assumption. You know what?
I think he's got some wisdom to him. He reminds me like of when you when a child asks their parents, like, where are you going, Daddy? And he says, I'm going to see a man about a horse. Because it's none of your business. But you don't realize that meant it's none of your business until later. He's like trying to lovingly push off these, but he's also in the throes of a new love affair.
Yeah,
so he's
passion.
Really, driven by his passion.
A buck and rut. And so again, she says, "You've mocked me, told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound." Again, most normal people, I would think that would set off an alarm to say, why is that concerning you? But he said to her, "If they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And the men lying in ambush were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Again, you know, the same things playing out, and it's even interesting that they were able to sneak into the inner chamber twice. At this point, you would think you'd go in somewhere, you'd check behind the curtains, open the closet door, look under the bed, you know, all the places where they were hiding last time. But again, he doesn't seem to care. It's kind of like a big game to him. And I don't know. It's, again, he's going to pay a pretty price for it when the time comes. But he snapped off the, you know, his arms like a thread, the rope snapped off. And again, it doesn't tell you how the Philistines were dealt with. Were, did he just jump, you know, out the window? Did he kill him? Did he? It doesn't tell you. It's just kind of a strange gap in the narrative. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak like any other man." So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head and wove them into a web, and she made them tight with a pin and said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep, pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. I just wrote a note in here. So we've seen this happen 3 many times. Even as a normal human, and she's doing it. And he has to know she's the one doing it. So it's even just, you know, mind-blowing that he just doesn't, like, catch the drift that, hey, this woman is trying to destroy you, or at least help people destroy you. And he just plunges on, and I guess this next little part gets to the heart of the matter. And she said to him, "How can you say, 'I love you,' when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me 3 times and not told me where your great strength lies." So obviously, you know, he's telling her he loves her. He's completely enamored. And maybe that's the crux of the thing is, you know, there's, you know, women or men that we probably all know that are in love with somebody that from the outside of the relationship, you can just look and see how toxic and what a messed up mess it is, and it's just getting worse. But the people in the relationship are still like, "Oh, I love you, I love you, it's okay, I'll fix him or her. You know, we'll all get this fixed and it'll be, you know, all kinds of unicorns and stuff." And it just, you know, never really works out. And so now it says, she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him. His soul was vexed to death. So I had to laugh. I looked up Proverbs 21:19, and it says, "Better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman." Her constant nagging had completely broken him down. And, you know, we've all seen women who do this to their husbands, you know. But here, I mean, I you know, again, I look up vexed to death, and it really, this is the only time in the Bible I can see that actually, that exact term is used in Hebrew. I didn't find it, you know, and it might, you know, you got to be careful what search engines you're using and stuff. stuff. Sometimes they don't. But I didn't find it because you're thinking, she has nagged him so much that he's just like, I'd rather be dead than hear this one more time. And he's about to, I guess, almost get that wish. Anybody comments? Whatever. I think everything's been kind of pretty straightforward up to here. Again, you don't understand how somebody, but we see people in our own lives that are willing to overlook many warning signs on the path to destruction. So, and that could even be us in many cases. All right. So then in verse 17, and he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. So he divulges the real, and I think we kind of get the mistaken thought that, like, somehow we'll see that his strength is in his hair, but it wasn't that. His hair was an outward representation of his relationship with God. So he's willing to just throw that away in the throes of the love affair. It's become the most important thing in his life, and he's willing to divulge, you know, what the symbol of his. So God, up to this point, has seemed to overlook a lot of faults, just like Samson does with Delilah, right? But at this point, it's going to be a kind of a different.
Was he, like, knew who he was because God said he was, but he didn't live according to what God. I mean, because his strength is really in that God called him to be a Nazarite, not in, like you said, his hair. It's who he's called him to be. It's not, there is no strength in any hair or any, although we see that it's linked, you know, in some ways, but in a lot of ways we do the same thing. We do stupid stuff all the time where we get involved with things we shouldn't even be around. We say things we shouldn't say. We lie about where their strength really is. And he might even not admit and understood the strength that he had where it came from.
Right. Or he just thought he was untouchable and it was all, everything was going to be forgiven. And
then live that way. Know who I am. And it's good to know who you are, but it's better to know who you are and live accountable, you know, and trust the Lord. So I'm kind of thinking that his strength is in what God said he was. He is going to be. It's his word.
Because later on he prays, Lord, give me strength.
And that's the first, I was going to point out, that's the first time you ever see him mention, really, the Lord. A lot of the, you know, we see all the other judges always, even if they always do have this right moments, and then they kind of fall off at the end. Samson kind of completely 180 degrees from that. He goes the other way. He starts
to look at it from that prayer view. His hair was already grown back prior to his prayer. He didn't have the strength. He never got the strength until he prayed. So what that opened up was that he actually didn't think of his hair. He may have tried some times before because his hair was coming back and thought, I'm getting my strength back, and nothing happened. And then he prayed and he got his strength. So he actually fell upon the Lord, and when you were questioning earlier about how he got into it, he fell upon the Lord to get his strength. Even though in times past, he looked at it as his hair was giving him the strength. He finally identified the strength wasn't his hair. The strength of all those times, he probably looked back and seen it, was God giving him the strength. So, when you question about being, I see he had a lot of faith at the end, because what other, he had no sight. I mean, people, when they lose their sight after having their sight, it's really a demeaning thing for them. And it's hard. It's easier for somebody that was born blind to be blind than somebody that was made blind. So you look at that and you start putting it all together, is God very patiently, I mean, he does it with us, very patient with us, and he waits, and when we finally come to the point where we say, God, I need you, that's when he shows up, and he's there for us. He's there the whole time. Don't get me wrong. He's there the whole time, but he actually shows us that he's there, lets us know.
I would say an interesting observation in that, when we get to that at the end. It'll be really, again, it'll throw more of an enigma. You know, that would be a very simple explanation. But there's even, he does something even stranger to throw another wrench kind of in that cog of all that, at least in my opinion. So here Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart. She sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up again, for he's told me all his heart. So the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. So this time, they all know the gig is up. They feel really strongly that she has gotten to the heart of the matter, and so they're about to pay her off. So as of this point, she will be a very rich woman. I don't know what the outcome. We're not really told, but it'll be. So she made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment, and his strength left him. And she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he woke from his sleep and said, I will go out as other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Is that what happened? Will it link back up automatically?
I don't think.
Come on, Betsy. Let's go.
Send one of them electronic things, huh?
Yeah, the gremlins are...
If they gave you a new number.
The unseen realm is... Okay. Well, while Scott's fixing this... again, I think it's kind of interesting just to...
Just go ahead.
Turn it off?
No, go ahead. Just
let me just read it. All this is verses and stuff, so we'll just have to accept the technical problems for what they were at this time. Boy, this really is being a... next. Sorry. So I think it's interesting that it says, then she began to torment him, and his strength left. So I don't know if she's like putting a feather in his nose, because it says that he woke up and said, so I don't know. I was trying to understand what it says. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. So your guess is as good as mine on that one, brother. And then she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he woke from his sleep. I will go out this other time, shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. So I'm a bit of a dispensationalist. So I think this is like when David, I put a note in here. I was reading Psalm 51:11 after he was, you know, caught in the sin that he was caught in. He said, he prayed, do not cast me away from your presence. Psalm 51:11, if anybody wants to. And do not take your Holy Spirit from me. And I think that's, to me personally, I think in the Old Testament we see a lot of examples where the Spirit comes upon, the Spirit leaves, Spirit, where we are given a different promise in that we are indwelt with the Spirit, you're sealed, and Christ post-crucifixion comes to live within your being. So, you know, there would not be this now, you know, we were just discussing, you could be doing enough really, really bad things that the Lord's pretty dormant in your life, but he's still there, as we've seen examples of evil that we can't even comprehend. And I don't know. So it's just really, really interesting that he did not know that the Lord had left him. That's how for granted he took his relationship and his position in God, in Yahweh. So then it says, and the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles, and he ground at the mill in prison. It's kind of interesting. This is a guy that had lived his whole life to this point in this book by sight. When he saw something, he wanted to have it. It says, and he saw this woman, and he went after, and he saw this, and he saw the honey in the lion, and he saw. So this is the guy that has lived his life up to this point by sight. And of all things, that sight has been taken. And I think it's a really, this is to me, so looking ahead to the Hall of Faith, I'm thinking, okay, this is where everything changes. So now he's lived a life by sight. Now he can't see anything. He's walking around in circles pulling a, and again, if the Lord had left him, he doesn't have a whole lot of, he's just another man like anybody else. So he's stuck pulling this millstone around. This probably had to be a really, really miserable existence. So I think it gave him time for a little introspection, and he reevaluated where he was with God. And it says, but the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. So even though he doesn't know it, I just put, when he's in his lowest of lows, now the Lord can step in and restore him. And it's nothing he's doing. He can't control his hair. He probably can't even touch his head, let alone. So the Lord is restoring him without any input from him. So it said, now the Lord of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they say, our God has given Samson over our enemy into our hand. And I just put a note in here, and I wanted to go into this, we'll see what time allows, a little deeper. But Dagon was a fish god that all the Phoenicians and all the Philistines were ancestors of seagoing people that had come there from, they believed from Egypt. And all these people worshipped this fish god, Dagon, because they were, you know, they were seafarers. And so it's kind of interesting. That's what Jonah is going up to preach against in the book of Jonah. They worship the same god, Dagon. So think about, that's why it's so interesting that he got spit out of the mouth of a fish, and he's there to tell them. So he lived through what would be their worst, these people that worship the fifth god, what his worst, their worst nightmare would be, was to be attacked by their god, and yet Jonah shows up swallowed by a fish, spit out on the beach, and he's preaching, again, he's not preaching repentance, he's just saying, 40 days, and you're going to get yours. Look, even the fish couldn't kill me, so you're in for big stuff. And kind of interesting that they repented, but that's this Dagon. We see him all throughout between Baal and Dagon and a couple other name gods. All right, so then it says, so they believe that their God is greater than Samson's God and has given him over into their hand. And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God has given our enemy into our hand, the ravager of our country who has killed many of us. And when their hearts were merry, they said, call Samson that he may entertain us. So they called Samson out of the prison, and he entertained them. And they made him stand between the pillars. That's going to be a big mistake. And Samson said to the young man who led him by the hand, let me fill the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them. And I'm always trying to look for like a new test. I know it's good to know your Bible. It's good to just know. But there's a difference between just trying to... there's trying to find the application in the New Testament where we can apply this to our life. So I went and looked at, so Matthew 7, 24 through 27 talks about building your house on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house upon a rock, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and it beat on that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand, and the rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew, and it beat against that house, and it fell, and it was great was the fall of it. So, basically, they're mocking, saying, our God's greater than your God, but they have this great big temple that God's going to show them that's not built on the rock. And they're about to experience a catastrophic failure. So now, when the house was full of men and women, all the lords of the Philistines were there, and on the roof there were about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson entertained. So I kind of was trying to look, and there's different. So it says there might have been 3,000 people on the roof. Doesn't tell you how many people were in the stadium. So there could have been, you know, a great amount. So here we have it. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me, and please strengthen me only this once, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. So this is kind of interesting to me in that if you take my premise that he lost his eyesight, which was his ability to go through life looking at things and not having any faith to see whatever he wanted to see and going after it, that now he's been restored because he lost his sight, and now he's more or less living by faith because he has to be led around wherever he's going. He has to have faith, you know, that they're not walking into a buzzsaw or whatever. But now he has to be avenged for my two eyes. So I thought that was kind of interesting if you look at the restorative properties, in my opinion. But he's being avenged for losing his eyes, which were really a blessing. So I just thought he becomes more of an enigma and more of an enigma as you...
How many times have we prayed the wrong way?
Agreed.
God still answers our prayers his way. So, what Samson was praying for, he felt like he was getting his, and sometimes we don't see it. We feel that we prayed and we got it, even though it wasn't exactly what we think. But it was why we prayed and God answered it. So it's the fact of that he came to God and he prayed for strength, because God gave him what he needed. And that's just like he does for us, because we as people, we do stupid stuff and we pray stupidly because we don't know exactly what the outcome of everything is. And, you know, so God works in God's way.
Yeah,
once
we
put him in that box, when he breaks out of it, you go,
But again, I just said, so he was blessed, really, by losing his two eyes, but he wants to be avenged for it. So I just found out again, he's just always...
He wants to do the vengeance.
Right. And there's always an enigma.
He has to be able to have the strength to do.
Yeah, but he still relied on God for strength. So it just shows, it's me, it just shows how we pray. That's what I see out of it. Like I said, I see things a little different.
Well, no, that's fine. I mean, I just think it's just a really interesting,
yeah.
And it's one of those cases in the Bible that you can see how truthful it is, because if I was writing this script, I would have never said that. You know, I would say, please avenge, you know, let me avenge the Philistines for what they've done to your people.
Right.
You know, or some great glorious thing that's going to bring glory to you. But he doesn't. He says, hey, they poked my eyes out, let me have a little vengeance.
Right.
So,
you were talking about the movie of Samson. Well, I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
And the difference between the movie and the thing was he was chained. And he threw the chains around the pillars and pulled them to him. But reading this over, it said he stood between them and pushed. It's just how they change it. The movie
yeah.
changes stuff, and So the real life is that he pushed the pillars apart. So they were pretty close. So the structure was pretty buried in that place. He was at the right place.
So Samson grabs the two pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, and his right hand on the one, and his left hand on the other. I think that's awesome that you just mentioned that. That God, and through all this mess, put him at the exact right place at the end of this. If he was on, you know, one side or the other side, anywhere but where he was, he wouldn't have been effective.
Or not as effective.
But just through where he is and where through all this.
A co-conspirator. Conspirator there, though. He asked the people that were leading him there to put him there.
Well, I'm sure they didn't know. He's been this weak little, you know, and I say little, I don't know what his physical attributes were, but he's just been another man. So to say, hey, lean me here, they probably didn't even give it a thought. Or maybe they were slaves too, and they were like, okay, if you can really do this, good luck. But I'm running.
In the dramatization that I saw of the Titan Sam, I think it was like that millstone that he was walking around for all that time. He's probably getting pretty strong, you know, physically too. So he had some strength built up.
So Samson grasped the two pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Then he bowed with all his strength. And the house fell upon the lords and killed all the people that were in it. So the dead that he killed in his death were more than those that he had killed in his life. I think that that's just, and he bowed with all his strength is like a really awesome statement. So as strong as he had gotten, he finally took a knee and said, yeah, I've reached the apex of my strength, but I'm willing to bow down, and doesn't say worship, but he has a posture of worship in death. And so by bowing down with all that strength, he had accomplished more in his death than he had accomplished in his whole life. He had finally fulfilled his mission and had finally accepted his place. So then it says, then his brothers and all his family came down and took him, brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah his father, and he had judged Israel for 20 years. It's kind of interesting. Zorah means place of the hornet, or bicolored, or two-sided, which is kind of interesting how Samson lived his life in a two-sided. He lived his whole life on one side of the equation, kind of by sight, and in the end, he finally lived his life. So I thought that was interesting. And those were his hometown, basically. They're real close villages together, and that's where he kind of ran around as a kid. And so again, it just tells you that he judged Israel 20 years, which is kind of interesting. It's only half. And the prophecy was he will begin to free Israel from the Philistines. All the other judges threw off the yoke of the oppressor. Jesus himself, appearing as the angel of the Lord, said he will begin to throw off the yoke of the Philistines. So he only ruled for half the time that all the other judges cut up to this point. The main characters in the book had all been 40 years.
The one thing I find interesting, the whole beginning of that, Delilah, well, not the beginning, but the middle, is that he knew his life was a Nazarene. He admitted, I've been a Nazarene, and he did all that stuff knowing that he was wrong.
Yeah.
That really shed some light on it. He actually admitted that everything he did was wrong.
Well, again, you can contrast a guy lost his daughter either physically or give it, depending on which way you think about that, because he took his vow so serious to the Lord. And here's a character that never took his vow, but he's in the Hall of Faith. So it just goes to show you, as much as our lives can be a failure in every aspect, there is still hope for us to find what the Lord has for us and live in that, and live in that faith. And like I said, this has been a really, I've read this, you know, a couple times going through the Bible, and as a kid you studied it, but to really sit down and pick it apart, it has a lot more questions than you would think it has. There's nothing in here that's pretty straightforward, I don't think. Comments? Questions? Run a little bit late.
I found it interesting you said that if I had written the Bible, you know, I wouldn't have put this part in. And that you find that several times, you know, like they say that if this had been anybody else writing the story of Jesus, they wouldn't have the women be the witnesses to the resurrection, you know, because the women were not trustworthy.
Yeah, and
there's several parts.
You all should be happy I'm not God. Trust me.
Yeah. Because you don't have the
yeah, I got a temper too, so you fried. Fried. Anything else? Well, thanks everybody. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.